Okay, my name is Evelyn. I've been attending Charlton Church since 1996. And I'm standing here before you to testify to this cause that we're here for tonight. And I ask myself how I got involved in this. And the reason, truly, if you ask me, is I don't know, because it wasn't a conscious decision. I just found myself being drawn into the spirit of things because I work with Evelyn and Misha on the Kingdom Kids team. That's a children's ministry. And for some reason, I asked Misha and Evelyn when they came back from their trip earlier on to the Philippines this year, why they were so excited about it. They were talking about it and they were like so full of life. And it's like big things are really happening and it's like so exciting. I'm thinking, wow, yeah, it's really exciting. And I wonder what's happening. But okay, if they want help, I'll give it to them. And then I took Evelyn home that night and I asked her, I said, you know, out of curiosity, how did this all start? I mean, why Duncarlin? Why the Philippines? I mean, when did it actually start? Because we actually went on a wish, I mean, the youths and her and some other people went on a mission trip last year. But what started it was my question. And what she told me, if I hadn't been sitting down, I would have fallen over because I thought it was amazing.
Hello, good evening, Pastor Dale, Mrs. Hansen, brothers and sisters. Magandang gabi sa inyong lahat, mga kapatid. I thank the Lord that you come for this, to this day to be with us because of this fundraising. I thank God for this. Okay, I'm not finished. I'm just beginning. Okay, before I start my testimony, I would like to introduce first where I came from. I come from the Philippines, from the southern part of the Philippines. And as you can see, I have my friend here, Alicia, wearing our traditional Barong Tagalog. As I have said, I come from southern part of Luzon, which is in Sorsogon, where you can see the map there. And I come from a fisherman's village, Duncarlin, Bulusan, Sorsogon. Sorsogon is located in the Bicol region, facing the Pacific Ocean. And if you go to Manila, you will fly from Hong Kong 1 hour and 45 minutes, and then domestic flight of 45 minutes to Legazpi. And then from Legazpi, you will travel about 2 hours and a half more on a private car. So that's where I am. I grew up in a poor village where mostly people have fishing is their income and their, you know, primary work or job. I'm getting nervous. Okay. Year 1984, when I have a dream that I can never, or I have never even thought that will happen to me. A dream is about the world end. And in that dream, I was sitting in a very high building, and I'm the only one who was alive. And the building was surrounded with water, and I look around, and it was just me. And I was trying to look for my family. I was crying and looking for them. And suddenly I heard a voice. And he said, "Come to me, my child." Of course, I was startled seeing that, hearing that voice. He said again, "Come to me, my child." And I look around. Nobody was there except me. And it's full of water. And I said, "Where is my family?" And then he said, I saw her, his hand and saying, "Come to me, my child." He keeps saying that. And so I said, "No, I want my family. Where are they?" And he said, "They're all gone." So I cried and cried, and I was calling my mother, my husband, and my brothers and sisters, but they're all gone. And he said to me, "Look up to the heaven." And I looked up, and he said, "What can you see?" I said, I can see an angel in the garden, and this little angel with a curly hair. And so During that time, I really don't know why he was saying, come to me. I really don't understand that time. And so I keep saying, I want my family, I want my family. And I was crying and talking. So my husband woke me up and he said, why are you crying and talking and nonstop talking? And, you know, and I said, I had a strangest dream in my life. So that was the time. My husband was here in Hong Kong. We were working together here, and we don't have my daughter and my son that time, so we're just the two of us. So I have my first child, and it's my daughter. During that time, our marriage was okay, and then I have my second child, and during that time, my marriage is getting really on the rock. Really seriously, because at first I learned my husband is very unfaithful, but he asked for forgiveness, so I forgive him. But then after, you know, I was conceiving my son, he went to worse. So that's when he decided to leave us and went back to the Philippines. So I was left behind here with my two kids, and knowing that I cannot afford to have my two children here, we went back to the Philippines with my two children and decided to leave my children there. That time was really, really painful, knowing that my husband was leaving us. And leaving my children in the Philippines is the worst nightmare of being a mother. But I tried to be strong for them. I worked so hard. I just work. And during that time, I was really angry at God. I was cursing him. I said, you are so unfair. Why did you let this happen to me? I was blaming him of all the things that happened to me. And then that was the most very, very painful years, being separated from my children. But then after a few months, actually, I decided to bring my daughter back here in Hong Kong and leaving my son in the Philippines through the care of my mother. So it was really hard being with my daughter here and being my son in the Philippines and being separated with my husband. You can imagine how I felt. But because I know something is going to happen, I believe that there is God, but you know, I was so angry at him. I didn't even go to church that time for how many months because I was so angry at him. I said, he is so unfair. And so in 1991, I met this missionary couple, American couple. And during that time, I lost my trust to anyone. I was just working and not going to church. And I was really, really angry. So when I met these missionary people, I was so, you know, stunned at them because they seems to be so nice, so kind and understanding and very gentle. But I thought, the same. All the people are the same, you know. So they invited me several times to their house. And the first time I came to their house, I was struck by this verse that I saw in their house, John 3:16. And I said, you know, for God to love the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but have everlasting life. I look at the verse and I said, what's that mean, you know? And so I was trying to avoid this couple, the missionary couple, because they seems to be so nosy. That's what I thought. But actually, they're very nice. It's just that I really don't want to talk to people about my personal life, or I don't trust anybody at all. So that time, when there was a time that they really cornered me when I went to their house. There was a lady there, another missionary, another American lady, and they really let me sit down in the middle of them, and they asked me some question. Personal questions, what's going on with your life, why you seem to be so angry at the world, you know, and never, you don't trust anyone, you know. And that struck me, you know, and I realized I cannot avoid them anymore. So I started sharing them my life, and then I cried with them. They cried with me, they prayed with me, you know, they hugged me, and you know, I never had that experience, someone praying for me that time, praying, crying with me, comforting me. It was an amazing feeling during that time. And then they prayed with me. And then they mentioned the verse. And they said, this lady shared with me, she said that God said, come to me, my child. And that struck me. That struck me once again. I said, that wasn't my dream. And so I shared with them my dream. And I told them that that was my dream year 1984. So I became a Christian that time, but my being a Christian is not that, it was gradual. And I didn't have my baptism right away, but it was over the years that I was, still trying to know my life fully and trying to understand what it is. So 1995, during that time, my son was in the Philippines and my daughter was with me continuously. So it's hard, you know, being separated from one of your children, having one of your children with you. You know, when we go to McDonald's, we eat something, you know, for a child, it was a treat to have McDonald's. So that time, every time we go to McDonald's or something, we always thought of my son in the Philippines. So it was hard. Being in Hong Kong, you know, it was empty. It was still, I felt empty without my son. So I was deciding to go home to the Philippines for good that time. I was kind of, should I go back? So I know how to pray that time. I was a Christian, but, you know, I wasn't that excited as it is right now, you know. So I prayed and I asked God what to do. And then, year 1995, I have another dream. He woke me up and he said, open your Bible and Luke 10. And of course I said, who is this again, you know? And when I opened the Bible in Luke 10, I said, what verse? And he said, read the whole chapter. As I was reading it, I was struck in Luke 10 verse 2, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. I didn't understand that much before, but when I asked my pastor during that time, he said to me, you have a calling. And I said, what calling? I said, me? I have a calling? I don't understand why me, you know. So that was 1995, and then so that later that year, we went back to the Philippines. That was Christmas time. And then when we come back, I have my son with us. And this boy, little boy, who was 6 years old that time, was very, very excited to come back to Hong Kong and be with his sister and his mother. So 1998, we went back to the Philippines again. We visited. And so every time I go back, when I was in the Philippines, I have seen, you know, the difficulties of life there, especially in my village. You know, I felt, what can I do with this? You know, like, I can't do much. You know, I wanted to help them, but I can't do much. So I shared with them the first king about the lady, I mean, the widow, with his son, her son, who was been struggling too. And when Elijah came to their life, they become very obedient to God. They obeyed God's leading to them. And that widow and the son had not run out of food afterwards. And, you know, when I look back that time, and my son was here in Hong Kong, you know, how God led us. It was amazing. If I will do it myself, having two children and a single mom raising here in Hong Kong and being educated with my two children being educated in an international school, I won't be able to do it. I can't. And it's too impossible for my life, for myself. Okay, year 2000, I was still in my old church that time, and I had this vision that I really still, I don't understand again during that moment. I have seen myself worshiping the Lord with all the youth, international youth, and with Pastor Steve. I was really wondering why with Pastor Steve. I don't know him that well. He's not my pastor that time. Why with Pastor Steve? My daughter joined Solid Rock year 1999. And she had a great time with Solid Rockers. It was been a wonderful experience for her being with the youth in Solid Rock. So I have seen my daughter really change so much. She had so much joy in her heart since she joined Solid Rock. So that year, I was still in my old church, 1999, year 2000 when I had this vision. I don't understand why I'm having this vision. While in my church that time, it was an old church. We don't have youth that time. I was involved in the children's ministry too, but we don't have youth. So year 2000 when I have seen this vision, and I was really wondering why. But I prayed to God, what do you want me to do? I've been seeing this vision. So year 2003, we went back to the Philippines. And I was sharing with the children, telling Bible stories with the children. And it was such an amazing, once again, it was an amazing time to be with the children, telling them stories about God. And they are so excited. And so the more I can see the children and the people in my place, the more I felt their need, not only material needs, but spiritual needs especially. Year 2003, during the end of that time, I was been coming to Shut-In Church, visiting here, and that time I was introduced to Pastor Steve by Armelin. Yeah, my daughter. And then, that was the time when I have known Pastor Steve, when I, 2004, I joined Shut-In Church fully as a full-time, member. And then, so that was the time, later that time when Pastor Steve is doing his sabbatical until 2005. I joined 2005, Solid Rock, that September. And then, we started it again. And then, that's when I have known Misha and David and some of Del Fabro's children. So, that time, I really don't know how the Lord is leading us, without knowing where He really leads me. So I joined that Solid Rock that time, and I joined Sunday school, and that's when Misha and David and myself were together in a lifesaver group. And that's when I met also, Evelyn Yan. So year 2005, life in the Philippines was been really, really hard. Typhoons was one after another. 17 typhoons hit the Philippines that time. And 2 major typhoons hit Bicol region that took so many lives, thousands and thousands of lives in the Bicol region. That's when I was really praying and crying to God of all these things happening. And year 2000, the same year, there is a spilt, oil spilt, in Rapu-Rapu Island, which is located in Albay. The mining spilt is from the Australian company, and Rapu-Rapu Island is in the sea, it's an island in the middle of the sea. So that is close to Pacific Ocean, which is located in our province. So because of the spilt, there are so many fishes was died, and the corals of the sea was destroyed. So it also affect a lot of the fishermen's lives. And many times, I called my family in the Philippines. They were all telling me the stories of how this family don't have food to eat, how this family is running out of, you know, like they don't even have money to buy medicines. And that really, really pushed me and struck me. And I was crying to God what I can do. It was really touching, very sad, you know, to know that my village is really suffering. I mean, not only my village, but of course I know more of the people of my village. And that's the time I told Pastor Steve, you know, many nights I cried to the Lord, what will I do? You know, the needs of my people, it's getting bigger and bigger, and I have no means to help them all. So that time I told Pastor Steve about it. And then right away, Pastor Steve donated some money to help the village. And then, and that year, 2006, Pastor Steve and myself went back to the village and visited the place. As we surveyed the place, he had seen the difficulties of life and the hardship there. There are many houses also that was blown away by the typhoon that has been passed that time. And so that was May when we went there. We only stayed there for one night and one day. And that time, in the morning at 6 o'clock a.m., we stayed in Dangkalan Beach Resort. During the time, it was very quiet. Very quiet. I decided to go to the sea. I went to the middle of the sea, because the seashore is quite low, it's not very deep. So I went and looked for a deeper place. And there, I was singing, praising, you know, in the stillness of the day, I was singing, praising, and talking to God. And then I heard this voice again. And he said to me, look around you. What you can see right now, you will share the word. And I said, who is talking to me? You know, I look around. And of course, I'm the only one who was there. It was very quiet. You can only hear the waves of the sea. And he said again, you will share the word here in this area. What you can see right now is the place you will share the word. And I said, it's you again? Why me? You know, I asked him, why me? And that time I was already nervous, excited. You know, it's a mixed emotion. Why me? You know, I'm so small. I have no strength to do this. Why me? And he said to me, be encouraged. I will be with you. And then I said, no, I can't do it. I have no power to do this. And he said, I will be with you. Be encouraged. And then I cried and cried and cried. And he said to me, there will be some opposition. There will be some opposition. But be encouraged. I will be with you. And then I just cried. Just to imagine that God is talking to you. It's unexplainable. I just can't find the right words to express how I felt during that time. And then I look around again. I said, it's too hard. I can't do this. But if it is your will be done, Lord. And then I started singing again, praising him. You know, when he was talking to Moses and Moses saying, I can't speak. And then God said, I will put words into your mouth. You know, that's what I felt during that time. But I said, I will obey what he said to me. Your will be done, Lord. So I was crying, laughing, thanking Him, praising Him, you know, and praying Him. And suddenly I heard another voice. It was my mother calling me because she's so scared I might get drowned. So I went back to the shore and I was telling my mother, "Mom, you shouldn't have called me. I was talking to God." And she didn't understand that time. And she said, "Really, you know?" And I said, "I was talking to God." And then, so I told Pastor Steve that time that God spoke to me. So we planned a mission trip. That is when, it was 2006 when we planned that mission trip, but it didn't work out. As God said, what God said, there will be some opposition. First, we were not able to go because of the, I think some parents did not allow us to go because the Bulusan volcano was spewing ashes that time. So the mission trip to my village was canceled, but the one in Manila went through. So that time, Misha, David, and myself, and my children were supposed to go on a mission, on that mission trip in Manila. But I don't feel like going because that's not what the Lord wants me to do. And I was very surprised because when I asked David why he's not going to that mission trip, and he said to me, "That's not what the Lord wants me to do. The Lord wants me to go to the village." And the same with Misha. So, you see, we all hear what the Lord wants us to do. So that time we were not able to go to the village. And then that January we went. Misha, myself, and my daughter went to spy the land. We spy the land. So the four of us went and it was very, very smooth. It was a small trip, but it went on very well. That's the first time the village people have seen, I mean, you know, in my village, that's the first time they saw a foreigner like them. Blonde hair, this skin very light, you know. The children were so innocent. They were so excited to see them, and they wanted to touch their skin, their hair, if it is real. So it was really good. It was really amazing. So that time, it was very exhausting, you know. It was, but we did some Bible stories with the children. We played with them, and then Misha and David were able to know the children so well, and you know. And then everyone was enjoying. And then after that Sunday night, we were resting and we were talking about how excited to be with the children and all the works that we have done. It was raining so hard at the time, and we were sitting on the beach, and then we saw the moon coming out. First, it was red, and then it was going up a bit, and then up, and then we saw this moon with a ring. It was such a beautiful scenery to see a moon with a ring. And we said it was the sign that God was very, very happy with what we did. So that time, we came back to Hong Kong and started to plan mission trip again. And this time it was a big mission trip. It was 2007. During the planning, we have to apply to the committee first for approval. And during that time, Pastor Steve was not in the church anymore. So I applied to our committee. Chairman was Mr. Peacock that time. Thank you so much. And then, while we were waiting for the approval, I was also struggling. I was struggling so much financially and emotionally. I was really down, and you know. So I said, okay, maybe we shouldn't do this mission trip anymore. We should cancel this. I don't want to do this anymore. It's really hard. It wasn't easy. So I remember what God said, that it will not be easy. There will be some opposition, but I will be with you. And so I started saying, okay, we're not going anymore. We're not going. But then I went to a house with this missionary people, a couple. I was doing something, like I went inside because she was in the hospital. I was getting something. And then I played this CD player. And I said, the house is so quiet. Why should I not listen to a worship songs? Then when I was listening to this worship song, I was wondering why it wasn't singing. It was a worship song. But it was the man was talking about Acts 13, the missionary journey of Barnabas and Paul. And I said, not again, you know. I said I wanted praise and worship song. Why is it talking, you know? And I was in the kitchen. I heard the preacher was saying, you know, he was telling that because Barnabas know the place, he should go there on a mission trip. He know the place. He knows the community. He know the people. He knows the village. And I said, huh? And he said, the speaker was saying, whether you are in the kitchen, what you are doing, God is there. And I said, again, you know. So I said, not again. He was talking to me again. So that moment, I know that we have to push through the mission trip. And that's when, after a few days, the committee agreed that the mission trip will go. It was just on time, the right timing, when I was just so ready to go. Then the committee said, yes, you guys can go. And so the planning and everything. And so the mission trip take over on July 2007. As you can see, that's when we were painting the library. We're about 23 people that time. It was a big group. It was fun. It was exciting. And thanks God, it was really amazing. So year 2007, December, I went back to after we left the village, the ministry began. That was July 2007 when the ministry there start. So during that time, we were so excited of what we have done, what we have, you know, given, what we have shared to the village. It was a wonderful experience. And at the same time, the people in my village was very hospitable, very willing. And, you know, like they are, you know, it's such a joy to see them. They're always smiling. Despite their difficulties in life, they're always smiling. And the more I felt how God is calling me to be an instrument for these people, the more it grew bigger and bigger in my heart. And then the last month of 2007, that was December, I have attended the first baptism in that ministry. 2007 and then 2008. That was December and January, the baptism took place. And then January was, I mean, when I was there, I have seen how the children are hungry for the word of God. And that's when God spoke to me that we should have a Bible discovery week. So that was January when I come back here. And I told quite a lot of people that we should have a Bible discovery week. But February 7, I collapsed. And that time when I collapsed and I was able to recover, I thought that is my second life. To be able to wake up again, I thought to myself, whoa, I nearly died. You know, and I thank God for that I was able to recover again. And that month of February, I've been having so much difficulties of my health, my body, like I always have headaches and many things. And then after a month of having headaches and not feeling well, I felt that, you know, suddenly I realized, I said, this is the work of the enemy. He's trying to distract me from all the plans that God is, God is letting me, you know. So I said, there's no way that the enemy will win. So I told some people here, and I said, we should go. Whatever what will happen, we should go. Because the Lord spoke to me that we should go. So amazingly, my headache was gone, and we went to the Bible Discovery Week. April 28 to May 3, we did that, and it was a very successful trip. Very successful trip. And that time was my group was able to know the village people well, and they become very close friends. So I stayed behind after my team went. I stayed behind because I have a checkup. So I stayed behind. And during my flight, I was alone. And then on the way to the airport, it was such a traffic. It is a really bad traffic. I was supposed to be in the airport at 4:30. I mean, 2 hours before my departure, my flight was 4:30. But because of the traffic jam, I was still in crossing at 3:30. And the taxi that I was riding is not even moving. And I said, whoa, I don't think I can make it. So at 3:30, my daughter texted me and she said, hi mom, I hope you can get there on time. And I said, wow, just on time. So I text her back and I said, please pray, because I don't think I can make it. I'm still in crossing. Crossing in Pasig is about 30 minutes to the airport if the traffic is not bad. If it is in a normal transport, it will only take you 30 minutes or 20 minutes, you will be in the airport. But because of the traffic jam, I was not even moving. It's too impossible for me to be there and to be able to get the flight. So instead of stressing myself, I just, you know, like, call the hotline of the Cebu Pacific and ask them if there is any available flight or the next flight or the next day that I can fly. But they said that the flight is fully booked until Monday the next week. So I said, oh no. And so I said, okay, Lord, if you don't want me to be in this flight, then what can I do? You know, it's up to you, you know. And I was, you know, I don't want to stress myself. So I told the driver and I said, please, can you find a way? You know, just find a way. And then while I was talking on the phone and, you know, I just saw the driver just, you know, just go. And I don't know what happened, but the taxi driver just, you know, go and go. And then I realized we're near the airport. I can see the signs. But, you know, in my mind, I said, but there's no way I can get there. It was already 4 o'clock and I'm still on the taxi. So it's too impossible. And then at 4:20, I was in the airport. Of course, I'm not expecting I will be there. I will be able to get the flight. Of course, I'm expecting it's closed and and nobody was there in the counter. So true enough, when I get there, it was closed. I have this luggage and I know my luggage is overweight. So I said, okay, you know, I just wait, you know. And still I try, by faith I tried. I said, can I not make it, you know. And they said, no, I'm sorry, it's closed. This is already for Macau, 6 o'clock flight, and you are 4:30 flight. We're closed, they're already there, they're boarding. And I said, okay, oh well. So I just stand there and doing like this, and knowing what to do, whether I should go to other airlines, you know. I said, just wait. I have this suitcase full of bags and things like that. And then suddenly I saw this foreigner rushing into the counter, and I can see their commotions and things. I was just watching them. And then I said, I was standing there, and then I saw the Cebu Pacific crew and came to me, and he said, yeah, you can come. I said, where? This is Macau flight, and I'm not going to Macau, I'm going to Hong Kong. And so he said, no, you can join them. They are also delayed. These foreigners are delayed. So put your bag. So I put my bag, and then I saw my first suitcase, 35 kilos. I said, whoa. And then I put my other bag, 15 kilos. It's 50 kilos. And the only allowed for the Cebu Pacific is 20 kilograms. So that means I have to pay 30 kilos more. And I said, whoa. And so because we are rushing, they just let it in there. And I said, so how about my passport? And they get my passport. So it was just really in a rush. So they get my passport, stamp it. And then there's this guy who were ushering us and took us to the immigration. And as we go through the immigration, I was with this guy. I didn't see the foreigners anymore. I was with this guy, and we went through the immigration, the checkpoint, all these things, I just passed through without checking. And I said, whoa. I look back, the queue at the immigration were so long, the queue where they check up your whole thing were so long, and I'm just passing through very smoothly without any check up. As soon as I arrived at the escalator going down to the gate of Cebu Pacific, as soon as I step, I know I have this guy with me all the way. As soon as I step in, I heard his voice again. He said, you see, I can be involved in small things, in small ways with you. Even in small things, I was with you. I cried. Once again, I cried. And I went down, and the crew were smiling at me. Said, good afternoon, Mom. You know, everyone was there. Nobody was boarding yet. They're all there. And I was just smiling. And Armelin texted back, so, Mommy, did you able to get the flight? I said, there is so much to tell. You know, and I sit there. And then the boarding time went by. I went to the last, I was the last one to get in. And there, inside the plane, I was alone in this big compartment. And as soon as I sat, this guy said to me, are you a Christian? And I said, yes. And then I sit there and thanking God of what he did. It was amazing, amazing. It was, you know, the experience that I have and these things that is happening in my life. You know, the difficulties, the challenges in my life, and God speaking to me, God showing me in a vision, God showing in a dream. It was incredible experience. It was an awesome, amazing, amazing walk with him. And I cannot thank you enough. For all the challenges that had happened in our lives, I know it's not an easy life that we went through. It was just an amazing journey with him. In closing this testimony that I have, many of you are here just to let you know that this is not an accident for you to be here. But God bring you here or brought you here for a purpose, for this reason, for this cause. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Auntie Evelyn. So as you've heard about how, you know, God gave her the vision to start the ministry there in Duncullen, for me, I guess what I want to share with you tonight is basically like a continuation of that. So you heard how, you know, I came to be a part of it. And yeah, like my life is going to continue to be a part of it in the next few months and years, it would seem, because after coming back from the mission trip in April, it was such a life-changing experience for me that, Mom was the one who first suggested it, but, basically I was so miserable after leaving all the people behind that I'd gotten to know so well. I was so miserable that after one day back, Mom said, you know, if it makes you so miserable to leave, why don't you go and live there for a period of time? I was like, are you serious? I mean, you'd really let me do that? And actually that was exactly what I'd wanted to do, although I didn't know it until she said so. So, and basically, you know, that's what I want to share with you tonight is I feel like God is calling me to the Philippines, to this village, Dangkalan, to live there, to work, you know, to work there, probably get a job, and, you know, I'll be working there, to earn a living, and also with the ministry that has been going on there, that started since last year, because I just, God's really put it in my heart to, you know, just to be there for them, to be with them, to be able, to help them in any way I can, just, you know, to be a friend and to pray with them when they need. And I really want to go, and I really want to give to them. And, I really prayed about it for weeks, because I didn't, you know, I wanted to make sure it wasn't just an emotional high coming off of a mission trip, but, you know, it wasn't. It continued the vision, this desire. It kept burning, even weeks after the mission trip. And God kept, kept confirming it to me through, through devotionals that I was reading. The words, they would be verses like, you know, as the Father has sent me, I'm sending you. I'm like, oh, okay, that's, just through friends I would talk to, and my family, and, you know, the prayers that people have prayed for me, and God has just continued to confirm it step by step, just that, yes, you know, it's confirmed that, you know, He wants me to go. I don't know when, I don't know, you know, how long I'll be staying, but it's, you know, I know that He wants me to go, and He wants me to be there. And so, you know, that's what is really in my heart to do. So, you know, and someone said, you know, what a big sacrifice this would be. I'm giving up all my comforts and my riches here. And I was like, what? That's not a sacrifice at all, because, you know, I have found such joy. I mean, just after the decision, you know, it was confirmed, yes, you know, okay, God, I believe You want me to go. And, you know, just after that was confirmed, I've just felt such a joy and excitement since. And I haven't felt such fulfillment in a long time. Like, for the past year, I've been struggling with depression, and I felt unfulfilled and, you know, dissatisfied, and just, it's never been enough. Even in my happiest moments, I've always felt this underlying sadness inside. I could never be completely happy. But since, you know, on that mission trip, and, you know, coming back, having gotten this vision and this goal, this focus, I have felt fulfillment and excitement for life now. Like, I have a reason to live. And I'm not saying that, you know, I didn't have it before. It's not that that there was something wrong with Hong Kong or with the people here. No, I love you guys. But it's just that, I believe that God's shown me, you know, like, His purpose for my life. He's shown me the next step that He wants me to go. And, you know, I'm just so excited. I can't wait to see what He's going to do next. And, you know, just in closing, I want to share these words. They're from a Christian novel called In His Steps. And these are words by the Reverend Henry Maxwell. He and his congregation decide to take a one-year pledge to ask themselves, what would Jesus do, before they do anything? It changed their lives. And, I mean, it was amazing to me as I read it. And so these are his words to the people who decided to take this pledge with him. I found it so appropriate to my own situation, too. Sometime I shall be able to tell you what a marvelous change has come over my life within 1 week's time, but I cannot now. But the experience that I've been through since that Sunday has left me so dissatisfied with my previous definition of Christian discipleship that I've been compelled to take this action. I did not dare begin alone. I know I'm being led by the hand of divine love in all this. The same divine impulse must have led you here also. I believe it's no accident that we're all here tonight. I really do believe, like, that God meant each and every one of you to be here, and He's called us all here for a purpose, for this cause, and He is going to do amazing things in each of our lives as we follow Him. So let's take that step together, shall we? Let's join Him. Let's walk with Him in His steps into all that He has for us. Thank you so much. Maraming salamat, and God bless you all.